Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and this is our year-end top best albums of 2020. I would say spectacular, but this year was a hellscape, so I'm not sure spectacular is the right word. And with me, I have...
We're almost there. We're ever so close to the sweet relief of normal shit and not awful shit.
And...
Honey? Where's my super suit?
Why do you need to know?
What the fuck are you thinking? It's the 21st! I gotta be... Get some shit out there.
Oh shit, yeah, that's right. That was a thing that happened.
Meanwhile, for the rest of us, only thing that happens for us is when Mercury goes into retrograde, even then we don't feel anything because it's weird.
Yeah, the only thing people get when Mercury is in retrograde is, I don't know, a whole bunch of magic crystals from some weird motherfuckers in a van that looks like it was purchased in 1967. But, yeah... We've somehow made it to the final 10 or so days of this calendar year, somewhat alive by a technical definition, but I'm pretty sure parts of us are all dead inside. Now, I've made the following comparison in the past, saying X year is like the Star Wars prequels. The music is really good, everything else about it sucked, and... To be fair, I feel like that applies more so this year than other years, because good God was the music the only thing keeping me fucking sane. And even then, it's like, I don't know, the passage of time is like just all fucked up thanks to the year 2020. Like, did anybody remember that there was a Childish Gambino album back in March?
Oh boy,
I kind of forgot about that, and I actually kind of liked that record.
Yeah, that fool, way past, it's like, oh yeah, that's right, that did happen.
Then again,
it just went away.
Then again, I guess that's what happens when you shadow drop an album in the same month that Emmy Award winners Nine Inch Nails shadow drop 2. And everyone's focused on that. Just, man, this year. I don't even know what's real and what isn't anymore. But this is the part where, well, I mean, we don't have a giant 2020 banner that we can just explode like a bomb on Last Week Tonight or something. We're just gonna talk about music that helped us deal with all this bullshit. So, as always, these proceedings start off with Mr. Alex over here. Sir, you have the floor.
Okay, so if you can't tell by the very tired tone in my voice, this has been an especially tiring and trying year, and I'm just so incredibly exhausted with everything that's been going on, both in the macro and stuff going on at home over the past month. Long story, I'm not going to get into it. And with everything going down the way it did, from the world shutting down to imbecilic assholes going more and more insane for power, this was just not a good year. And I ended up falling out of a lot of habits I would normally be all over. Habits that I wanted to stick to at the start of the year because... Meh. I'm shaking my hand at the world for everything that's happening. And one such would be checking out a ton of albums. But that's also because there just wasn't a whole lot that got me interested to go back to this year. Now, last year... 2019, I had a heavy list of 20 top albums, all of which I've gone back to in some degree over the last year plus. This year, though, I just didn't get that same ingrained connection with a ton of albums, and I honest to God tried to get into a lot of stuff this year, but for whatever reason, barely anything clicked. And that's partially because incoming industry rant... The state of the music industry right now is not good. I do not like what the music industry has shifted toward, with unannounced shadow drops that people are expected to internalize immediately, thus robbing people of time to really develop any actual feelings toward a song or album. It's the Netflix strategy. Just listen to all at once when it comes out and, you know, go on to the next thing. EPs and singles being pushed and marketed with a plea to get it to number one with sales and B-sides and remixes. I believe when Anthony Fantano had one such case as his worst song of 2020, rightfully so. I don't like that either. And of course, there's all the shenanigans of just the usual goings-on with record industries and labels, and yeah, the way everything's been pushed out. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I'm really not. Especially since now we're prioritizing higher-priced bundles with, you know, t-shirts and merchandise. And I'm good with the box sets because that actually has some value to it. But when you're trying to sell a single with, like, a t-shirt and stickers for $35 or $40, that's when I feel really disconnected from what's going on. Because at that point, it's become less about trying to prepare people for an album of great songs and just trying to get a song out to get the immediate reaction and reception. Which is why we've had how many songs debut on the Hot 100 at number one? And I said debut at number one because you're going for that immediate sale, that immediate reception. It doesn't give you any time to actually internalize anything because you're expected to just listen to it and buy it immediately en masse and then move on to the next thing. I don't like that. This year has been flooded with singles and albums just like that, going for the immediate reception, the immediate sale. And that's partially why I couldn't go back to a lot of the bigger albums. Because once the immediate reaction's gone, what's left? All you have left is an album or a single that in a couple months' time you're going to forget about. Ugh. And I really hope we're going to work on that and that the people at Billboard are going to fix how they're charting everything, because with this trend of immediate number one singles and album bombs and streaming metrics clogging up the genre charts all over Billboard, I just really hope that they're going to fix their algorithm or whatever they're doing. Oh, by the way, did y'all remember that Rolling Stone has their own chart? Because I totally forgot about that.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing.
I couldn't tell you what's going on with that, but apparently they're still doing that thing, like, unlike anyone's ever noticed, because, yeah, according to chart data, all that matters is Billboard. And honestly, yeah, I just wish they would fix their fucking algorithms, that way it's not so clogged with just... Yeah, not a fan of that. I'll also admit that I am just a horrible creature of habit, and that when I find something I like, I stick with it hard. I buy the same order at Taco Bell, I get the same coffee at Starbucks, I listen to the same albums over and over and over again. Case in point with my Apple Music Rewind playlist. It's nothing but Rush and Devin Townsend. That's all I listened to all year. In a year filled to the rim with bullshit from all corners, all I could listen to with a strong focus and connection were albums that were already there that I have an immediate connection toward that I've had for a long time. Case in point with all the re-releases and remixes that came out this year from bands like Porcupine Tree, Linkin Park, Between the Buried and Me, Pain of Salvation. All albums that I know and can focus in on with no effort at all because it's already there. While a good chunk of new releases here, yeah, it just wasn't the same. Wasn't the same this time around. So if this list that I have feels a bit underwhelming and disappointing, then I'm sorry about that. It's just, this is definitely the end result of a year that was certainly a year. I'll say that much. A year that was and a year that wasn't. But on the upside, 2021's already looking better. Stephen Wilson, Transatlantic, and the return of Liquid Tension Experiment. It has to be a better year by default. So consider this list a definite quality over quantity, a non-fat skinny latte of a favorite albums list from your favorite neurotic Dullahan, whom you will never see on camera because I am, yeah, you all don't get to see this face. But of course, honorable mentions, a pair of EPs, Fever 333, Wrong Generation, it's 20 minutes of Fever 333, enough said. A fine soundtrack to the year that was and the year that wasn't. And also, Bring Me the Horizon, Post-Human Survival Horror, only for the track Kingslayer, because that is a very good track.
As it should be.
Yeah. And so, here's my top five of 2020, a year that I very, very much would love to forget about and just move on from, much like everyone else. Okay, number five, Metallica, SNM2. Yes, I know it's a cop-out to put a live album in here, but fuck it, it's my list. So, serving as the official sequel to my all-time favorite live album, SNM, it's a bit of a tall order. But they managed to pull it off with this one, and what would end up being, through no fault of their own, the final show of the 3-year worldwide tour, 19,000 strong, to serve as the grand opening of the Chase Center in San Francisco, with a brilliant performance of Unity within the loud and boisterous metal domain, and the poignant arrangement of the San Francisco Symphony, combining into one with tremendous results. I am very glad that a lot of the original arrangements from Michael Kamen were in here. Master of Puppets being the exception. Why would you change that up? That freaking arrangement was perfect. But the true shining moments of this concert would be the stripped-down interlude. The Unforgiven 3, with James Hetfield singing solo with the orchestra, bringing in a new presentation to an already very powerful song, and as an orchestra player myself, you know, for 6 or 7 years anyway, yeah, I'm all about that stuff. I love it when bands do this kind of stuff with orchestral arrangements. Then there's the acoustic reworking of All Within My Hands, which did get significant radio play throughout the year, surprising everyone. Yeah, it's another fine way to rework a song that already is very obnoxiously abrasive and morph it into something much more laid back but also sinister when you consider the lyrical subject matter. It's weird how it works, but yeah, it just works. Yeah, the presentation is immaculate. Sound quality, while not as pristine as the original SNM album was, with how many times it was probably remixed with the, all that stuff, it still comes off as a genuine, authentic live performance. That's something you can't really replicate with, you know, the biggest freaking metal band in the world and one of the biggest orchestras in the world. They pulled it off, and they pulled it off very well. So, yeah, kudos. Here's to hoping we can see you on tour in 2021 when the world starts cleaning up its act. Crossing my fingers. All right. Number four. Guitar Fight from Fooly Cooly. Their second album, Soak. Brittle, punk-fused math rock that doesn't shy away from nerd culture like Mario 64, Kingdom Hearts, Pokemon, and yeah, Fooly Cooly, and wears its influence of the Pillows all over its sleeve. This is a brilliant short burst of indie slash emo slash punk slash mathcore. That's all I gotta say. It's just, it's a frantic, in-your-face experience. Probably one of the best unknown albums of 2020. It's one of those albums that not a lot of people know about, but more people need to know about, because it's really good, and hopefully good things will happen with this band going forward. Check them out on Bandcamp. There's your plug. Alright, number three here. Well, you all knew this is going to end up here somewhere. The Weeknd, After Hours.
Where's his Grammy nom, you bastards?
That's only partially why I hold it up in high regard, but yeah, having gone back to listen to the album over and over again, because it's just one of those albums that's always been around throughout the year. Yeah, I can say definitively this is the most sonically rich and deep-cutting album we've heard from The Weeknd so far. Thanks in no small part to some immaculate production from guys like 106.9 Never, Metro Boomin, and even Oscar Holzer and Max Martin, with a very interesting blend of electronic trap-fused R&B with more elegant pop, combined with the heart-bleeding lyricism on display. There's a dual sense of false bravado and broken longing to the tracks on the album, because while you'll hear about Metro Boomin turn his hoe into a mosh pit, you'll hear in just a few moments after, trying to be a better man, but I'm heartless. And it shows in the stage persona he's taking up, looking like he's ripped right out of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas with a bloodied, broken nose. And that's a look he's committed to all year long. It's really impressive just how far he's willing to go for this look. And from start to finish, this album is just a dream pop enriched post-Bender journey from the opener of Alone Again through the banger of Heartless, the bona fide pop track of 2020, Blinding Lights, all the way through the painstaking final bars of Until I Bleed Out. This is the album that shows that there is much more to the Abel Tesfaye than meets the eye. Now, let's hope we can get him on tour as well, because imagine seeing The Weeknd in that getup performing an entire 90-minute, two-hour set. I would pay good money to see that.
God, please let those vaccines get here.
Please. Okay, and now, number two on here. And the crowd goes, RTJ. Run the Jewels, RTJ4. The album that is easily the strongest pound-for-pound album that the duo of LP and Killer Mike have ever put out, so far anyway, both in the production and the strength of their bars. Tracks like Pulling the Pin, Walking in the Snow, and Just are just a few examples of how calculated the strength of the words spitting out to you truly are. And doubly so for when this album came out. In the middle of a cataclysmic pandemic that took everyone's attention. Oh, and this COVID thing, too. Yeah. Which just made everything land with a harder and harsher impact. As I mentioned time and time again, time is nothing but a flat circle, and we keep repeating the same mistakes over and over and over. Then they had the Adult Swim performance. And seeing the album perform with the addition of proper body language and movement and visuals, that just makes the impact that much greater even more. An impact that could only be felt in a year like this, with widespread bullshit as far as the eye can see. And this is the album that I can say sits atop them all in the macro of the year of our Lord 2020. But in the micro, the personal, to quote the singer of this band, at the start of their track, Beer and NyQuil, give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire. Number one, Spanish love songs, brave faces everyone. I said it was going to be that way in February, and look at that, I was right. This is the album that defines the year that was and the year that wasn't for me in a much more personal sense, because I had a lot of things planned for this year that just couldn't be met. And as we head to the end of the year, I'm a 27-year-old college grad still trying to find my way in the recording industry, still living in the same bedroom I've lived in since I was 11 years old, keeping my relationship afloat despite being apart by a couple hundred miles, just working to help pay the bills and keep food in the house despite cut hours. Lurking in the background through all that, though, there's that lingering clinical depression that loves to creep up at the worst possible time. And the start of this album with the opening chords of Routine Pain sets that mood fucking perfectly. At times, this album, I believe the term is grouch rock, it feels like a harsh personal attack. And at others, it feels like reading through a broken journal filled with dire lament, filled with regret over where you've gone in life. But it doesn't have to be that way forever, as the title track showcases with reprisals from the entire album, building up to its final bars. I'm sick of yelling at strangers, don't want to do this forever, and when it all burns down, will you carry me over? We don't have to fix everything at once. We were never broken. Life's just very long. Brave faces, everyone. Look, this year has sucked really bad. It's been, at times, a nightmare. We're all going to have to put in a lot of work to make sure a year like this never happens again. And for me, when things finally start to clear up, and yes, they will clear up, I am ready to go back out in the world and go back to those things I took for granted. Because, yeah, I want to go out to the movies again. I want to go to concerts. I want to watch a ball game, drive across state lines, travel, vacation, do all those things we haven't been able to do safely throughout this fuckscape of an apocalypse. And yes, I really do want to go to concerts. I was going to see Between the Buried and Me back in June. I'm still mad about that. Meanwhile, here's Steel Panther deciding to just say, fuck it, we're going to do it anyway. Vince Neil Stein is very disappointed in you guys, by the way.
Oh, I didn't even know that happened.
Yeah, that happened. In Florida.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So while things feel really dark now, it won't be dark forever. There will be a light to clear through the clouds. It's just going to take time and effort and work from all of us. And if we can get there by summer, then we'll be in better shape than we are, than where we are now. And consider this a promise for putting out kind of a lacking list this time around. Next year, I will try to branch out and see what the rest of the music landscape has to offer as well, so that I'll have more than five albums to talk about at the end of 2021. But hey, I already have three already penciled in, so, you know, nowhere to go but up from here, in every sense of the phrase.
Just 10 more days until the calendar shifts over. And I swear to God, 2021 better not be 2020 New Game Plus.
Yeah, because if it is, we're all royally fucked.
But time to move on with yet another reflection on the year that was and wasn't, with the top list from our good friend Mark.
Yep, My list is, well, you know, usually you start doing this, my list always just goes up and up. Like, we started, it was from 10 to 15 to 20 to 25. You're thinking, oh, wait, it's going to be 30, right? No, it's not 30. It's actually 20. Mm. Because I'm going to be fair, while it is more of a quality over quantity type of year for me, there's also the year where it's like, I don't know, I wasn't focused much on looking at everything I wanted to find. Like, I mean, there've been some albums that I like, but some I haven't returned. Like hell, there were some that I had to mark out this list. Like, I did a preliminary list, and names across like Mac Miller, like, his album was good, but I didn't listen to it every time. Logic, he was good, but it doesn't die. Even Madlib and Oh No, whose album came out January, and I'm like, no, I'm like marked it out too. Like, there's been a lot of cuts from this list. Even Shabazz Palace, I cut them off the list as well. It's like, I kind of enjoy that album, but yeah. I got 20 albums to say. But first, I'm gonna do a little honorable mentions. But I'm just gonna list them out. I'm just gonna say what they are, but you might be surprised at what I put in there. So anyway, honorable mentions. Here we go. From Knowledge, 1988. From Bodie James, with Stolen Tools, Manger on McNichols, and with Real Bad Bodie, or Real Bad Man, or Real Bad Man with Real Bad Bodie. We have Lil Dragon, New Me, Same Us. Toki Monster, Oasis Nocturnal. Preservation, Eastern Medicine, Western Illness. Action Bronson, Only for Dolphins.
What are you telling us, Mark? Are you secretly a dolphin?
Yeah, you never know.
Is that your superpower? Dolphin transformation? Like, this is Animorphs?
Our new Animorphs? Man, I ain't heard that shit in a long time, but all right. Anyway, Hudson Mohawk, BBHE and Poom Gems. Cohen the Machine, From King to a God. Armani Caesar, The Liz. Mike, Weight of the World. Calm Trues, Indicate 2. And last but not least on this honorable list, The Avalanches, We Will Always Love You. And I'm gonna add this. To this one only. This is a group from my album whose album came out in 2016. That's one of the albums that I regret not putting on my list the first time I was doing this. I'm making it up right now because I really dug this shit. Like, if you listen to this album and the last album, you'll think, okay, I can see why. I can see why Mark liked this album or these albums, but yeah. But yeah, let me go. Let's start with the top 20, rightfully so. Number 20. Bodie James and Jay Versace, The Versace Tape. Yeah, this has been one good year for Bodie James, despite everything. I mean, it's his first record being signed to Griselda Records. And while this one's a bit more short, like, he still does what he does, and not to mention, the one breakup star this year is producer Jay Versace. You know, that one guy from Vine. Which you thinking, oh, that's him making those beats? To be something like somebody like DJ Premier or any other veteran hip hop producer would make, like, it's something like that. Like, this is actually some good shit on here. I can see if I could fuck with him, but yeah, this is. While I say there was a better part from him from Bodie James this year, this is quite a solid one to come out as in this year. Number 19, Denzel Curry and Kenny Beats, Unlocked.
Whoa, Ken.
Yeah. Denzel's still doing work, even though. You know, an EP release like before this, but this is basically your in your face, energetic, bombastic type of second face of the door type of EP with Curry doing his usual thing, doing these savage bars, and Kenny doing this, and Kenny doing the damn thing on the production, which got all the tizzy that Curry just brings out, What is a whole lot of this like manic, wild shit happening there. And yes, if you do want to check this out, check out a short film with it, which, yeah, you should probably check that out too. Number 18, Rock Marciano, Mount Marcy. Yeah, once again, Rock Marciano put out an album that, well, frankly, he bought it in November, which is not late, but it did get the streaming of it. It did get streaming, 2 weeks later, after the whole exclusive shit was up. But yeah, even though it's sort of like the usual shit that, he's saying that the last day is two times, but yeah, this is like what I expect from Rock most of the time, he got some interesting tracks in here too. Like, he got one track called COVID Call for Schoolboy Q, which that interests me. Like hearing Schoolboy Q I can say it still got that weird but spook production on it. Is it got, what usually comes about, like, you know, his pimp days, all that shit. And I'll say that's also impressive. Like, it's actually worth getting to. Like, I will say, like, in terms of his projects, like, since then, like, we'll say it's the middle for me. Like, I still think maybe, Robot Revenge 2 might be a better one. I like it better than last year what he did, which was Marky Lago. But yeah, my policy pretty much hit it. Number 17. And this one I never talked about because I went to it from a friend of mine, Mock Homie, Max Hard Lemonade. Now here's the thing, this album is only streaming on Tidal.
Oh,
which is, yeah, only my title. And because, yeah, if you look how much it costs on his site, let's just say, but those who getting that stimulus check, that worthless ass stimulus check, well, you can cheat something that.
Oh,
yeah, at least for the but I will say this album is pretty much what I usually love from hip hop like this. So you got unique sound production, slightly eclectic bars from Macklin, who's underrated rapper. I kind of like him a bit. And he gets a features from, well-known, rappers like Yo Droog, the guy from Earl Sweatshirt. Like, it's a good album to stream. Like, I would say it costs $100 to, okay, I'm going to say, right now, like, CD costs $100, vinyl costs $200. The deluxe vinyl costs $400. Even the cassette costs $7. Even the cassette costs $7. I mean, if you got the cash or then fuck it, go ahead. But if you will, or broke motherfucker like us, yeah, he's true on title, and you're wondering why am I talking? I think this album, even though the buy it costs you a foot in the leg and the ass. I mean, I sort of get why. I mean, there's no why, because streaming ain't exactly, the biggest money maker. Yeah, hashtag the egg gets a chode.
Hear, hear.
But still, good album. I say, if like your underground hip hop, if you have Tidal, then yeah, it's worth checking out. Number 16, Open Mic Eagle. Anime, Trauma, and Divorce. If you had a bad year this year, well, Oh My Amigo, well, if you had a bad couple of years, considering all the albums was, him going through a divorce, financial woes, anxiety, self-doubt, all that shit that just makes you come in a few positions and wondering, help me, like, all that shit. And, of course, it gets, you know, speaking around, like, things of anime and shit, like, you got checks like Death Parade, which you all know about. We don't know about that shit. And of course, my favorite track being Head Ass Idiot Shinji, which, okay, I really do get that song. And of course, I know a lot of JoJo fans will look at checks like Ace's Bop or I'm a Joe Star like that. But yeah, I will say it's a good one. Like, that dark humor, real shit going on, and some weep shit. Which happened a lot in most music today, in movies this year. We'll get to that later on. But yeah, this track, yeah, this track's pretty good. The album's pretty good. Shit, what am I saying? 15. Joji with Nectar. This is probably the second time on the list I put a solo album from somebody from 88 Rising. Yeah, that's the thing. But yeah, like, even, okay, I know the man from North Philly Frank have a voice. He got a major stellar voice, and I kind of see it in album form, like, at least, of course, that for me. And I get that the content may be somewhat samey, but I guess he sings it so, he does it so well. It's like, is there from content from like Post Malone or Black Bear, because this music is actually good, and you know, good and actually get experimental in a good way. Now his content deals with you know dealing with loneliness, all that shit, relationships and fame. But it's, but it does the handle well, and it goes through a lot of various styles of production here and there, and it makes it be a pretty good album. Also, him and Too Much to Survive should team up more often. I kind of want that to happen. I want him and that guy to team up more often because it works well with him. 14, Gorillaz present Song Machine Season 1 Strange Times. I think one of the better moments, or at least the ones that comforts us in 2020, is the music videos that Gorillaz keep putting on monthly, or at least sort of monthly, or whatever they can. Like, that's been one of the bright spots we had here, and we know we got a whole album of that. The songs we got were pretty good. Like, Strange Times were good. Pac-Man, my favorite track. Pink Fan was pretty good. And they got some deep cuts that I love. Like, The Lost Chord, I just really fucking love. With Love to an X, I really dug. And MLS with JPEG Mafia, which a very different, which, like I said, a very different JPEG Mafia I heard from here than what it usually does. Like, this album does have, like, we'll say one thing it has is that Damon Albarn has more of a presence here than the humans, because he does, you know, you do hear a lot more than just him being backup most of the time in that album. Whereas this, he does have more of a presence here, and it's usually got, which is a very very wide the diverse cast, which is, like, you know, from Elton John, from Robert Smith, Schoolboy Q, Slow Tie, and a bunch of those motherfuckers whose name I can't pronounce, or I either forget the tip of my tongue. But this is one interesting album to get into this year. And seeing how there being a Netflix movie coming out of this soon, it's like, okay, I'm definitely on board more of this. Number 13, Machine Drum, A View of You. Now, part of me almost forgot that we had to talk about Machine Drum song at the beginning of the year due to Adult Swim single. And going back to the album a lot, there's a lot I really dug from the production. Like it has this, like, you blend this gorgeous crystalline production which sounds like what dinosaurs sound like, but you got this very heavy action-esque drum and bass beats, like, just going down like this. It's a clash that sounds both nostalgic and present. Like, you got tracks like Freddie Kane, like Freddie Gibbs, pulling his ass up on the track Kane Trunk, with that something that sounds so sound production in that minimalist. So, and even the minimalist slow building work of Spinbox of Father, which another track that I kind of fuck with a lot. The Relic is a good track to work out to, or at least to do a run. Like, if you play this song and you run to it, and you can walk around run around the park or something with nobody out, it'd be tense. They'd be running for your life or something. Like, you know, okay, no, I'm stop there. But anyway. Anyway, this album is really good. It's really, this one, the better electronic albums to come out this year. Speaking of electronic albums, number 12, One Tricks Point Never, Magic, One Tricks Point Never. So I was pretty much psyched to hear he had an album coming out soon, given this Uncut Gems, and given how it is mostly like, so I won't say greatest hits tape is more like an homage to what he did before his other works, works like Age of or Gone Delete, like all elements of his past albums all grouped up into like sort of like a for real station, which does work considering well his name is 106.9, which is basically 106.7. I get it for those that didn't get that for the first time, but yeah, I will say, you know, it's probably that he got the Weeknd to be as a producer on this album, so it's like, like I said, them two should probably team up more. It's a wholesome in the future, because well, all tracks like Long Road Home, I Don't Love Me Anymore, Bo Echo, Lost But Never Alone, No Nightmares, and even all the crosstalks. Those are still mind blowing. Like, I still get a euphoric feel from this album going over again and again. And yeah, it's just that great. Number 11. The Butcher coming out. Being the Butcher. Burn the Proof. Now, I know with Being the Butcher, people always say that he's the best rapper of all the Griselda people, and I can agree. I can say part of me regret not listening to Tana Talk 3 more listens in 2018. I should have get them more listens, but what got me curious is how it's gonna be handled, considering Hit Boy is the major producer of the whole thing, and I wonder if it's gonna go like very mainstream, or will it be a little bit different? And wow. It's slightly more polished, more cleaned up. It's still got that. It still lives the Grammy Street Talk shit on there, along with some introspective shit. Like especially with stuff about when he got famous, things are gonna change around him. Like, you know, all that shit. And well, given the fact that shit happened to him a couple of weeks ago, and don't forget he did release a song about that incident. Like a couple of weeks back, yeah, there might be more on that, but this is like that. Even if Benny changed producers, he still talked that shit, and it's still some good shit. And now you got to the top 10. Number 10, it's Tumor, Heaven to a Tortured Mind. Now, a couple years back, of course. Like, I met him mostly thanks to Rob talking about him on every other last album. And now, they're going to this album, which, while last time I had more of electronic, this one's a bit more experimental, psychedelic side of rock and soul, which is very reminiscent of stuff like Prince of David Bowie in that vein. Like hell, Kerosene is basically... It's basically just oozing sex. Like, there's even a music video for that. That pretty much starts with the main couple just fucking the car wreck. Even though there's like an uncensored version, or at least an orated version on Vimeo. That site. Yeah, he went further and started going into more of a different side of what we hear from before. But yeah, this shows why I still mess with this guy. This guy has a lot of talent. There's other tracks like definitely like from Gospel from a New Century, The Kerosene like I mentioned before, Half Done on the Lights, Dream Palette, Romantic Superstars. Yeah, I think I lip synced that song one time on TikTok. Don't shame me. All right, I like that song.
Yeah. I'm just silently judging you.
Oh. Okay. Anyway, I was good. There you go. Number 9, Thundercat. It is what it is. The Weave album of the year. Kind of, maybe. Well, it kind of is.
I mean, it actually had a song that made its way into an anime, so.
Yeah, it is. And you got all the Weave shit, like, you know, Uncle, you know, like the song that made through an anime, Carol on Tuesday. The song talking about do references pretty every black every Weave anime fan. Now, damn, I am tongue twisted today. Fuck. Okay, what I'm saying is, you got the Weave shit. You got the part where he deals with all his emotions, you know, love and loss, the usual goofiness shit that we expect from him. And of course, there's pretty much from him himself, Fine Lewis and crew, which y'all better get them on for some Grammys. Damn it.
Y'all better.
For the worst reason, Vice is still in love. The fast-paced move for I Love Blues Cold and of course, the George Lambert move again. And the smooth living vibe of Unacquired Love. Thundercat is killing these tracks. And I hope, and like I said, the more Grammys don't fuck it up. Even though you might.
Oh, they will, most definitely.
Number 8. Run the Jewels for RTJ 4. It's been the album that pretty much says, oh, yeah, we're living the darkest timeline. It's the darkest part of the date, considering, have you seen the world today? I mean, say it, you know what it is. Especially the song Walk in the Snow, which, yeah, the song still feels chill in my body. Well, listen to that. But yeah. But while they still offer social commentary, that song's adjust, and of course you get some wild bangers like Yankee and the Brave, Out of Sight, Holy Clamber Fuck, which is still an awesome track with that ridiculous awesome name, and of course you go last track a few girls for the Final Squad, but yeah, RTJ brought again from the bars, the commentary, and the beats, yeah, they did it once again, and to add on that. At least, like, it's very unrelated. Wow, they made the 2077 soundtrack, made it sound so much better than the actual fucking game, from what I heard. Like, penis don't glitches. Listen to the soundtrack before.
Penis, yeah, don't glitches.
Yeah.
You can't top that.
No joke. I listened to the soundtrack before recording, at least part one of it. And that's a decent album. It's a decent album. Like, I hope the anime don't suck.
I don't think the anime could be any measurably worse than the game, unless this was literally something like Masamune Shiro's Gun Dress. Sorry, I've been watching that new anime Abandoned episode just because, good God, the making of that anime, what the fuck?
Oh boy.
Stay tuned for X-Arm in January.
Oh no!
You're telling me that they're gonna send out an anime that's basically just glorified animatics for 12 weeks.
Oh, God. Oh, great. Look on the cover now, no time of the season. Okay. Anyway, back to music. Number 7. West Side Gun, Pray for Paris. And I'm pretty sure people thinking... I'm thinking, I wonder if so high up. I mean, look. Even though Westside released a lot of projects this year, this one will go back. This one I'll go back to the most, and the one I dig the most. Like, this one is most. It's most focused. It's the most focused production. Most focused album out here. Like this is what I keep going back to because with pretty much with such luxurious results of just some good old hip hop, Grand Street hip hop. If you got, such as Alchemist, DJ Muggs, DJ Premier, Tyler Creator, who produced a track on here, and of course, Mr. J. Versace. And of course, West Gun does brought a lot of personality in here. Like, you see him as a funny dude, but funny dude that could probably fuck you up, and he's his tracks are pretty much fire. Like, No Vacancy is excellent. 327 with Joey Badass and Tyler Creator, that was magnificent. Allah Sent Me with the whole Griselda Gang, Get Good. Bunch of Answer Freddie Gibbs and Mark Marciano, yep. Versace, got that. Claymore Kick with Bodie James, fuck it, I love that track. Sean vs. Flair with a DJ Premier beat, oh yes. There's a lot of love about this album. This is the one I just go back to the most. Because of West Side Gun, because, like, most other albums, like, there are some songs I like, but I haven't gone back to them as much. Like, I didn't go back to Five Guys, House of God Part 2, or even the last project he did with, Here Comes the Sunshine, which was the debut album he did with Shady, which he's no longer signed to! Because apparently, I think West Side Gun's fed up with the way Eminem don't promote his shit, which I don't blame him. I mean, you promote your verse. I mean, you promote Eminem. You promote your verse on first on Big Sean's album, and I get you, but I'm talking about Alchemist and all, because, well, I mean, it's Alchemist, that's your boy, you should have known him, but you can't get in love with the Westside Gun as well? Come on, man. Well, at least Westside Gun has free reign now. Number 6. One that's a very deep-ass surprise for me this year, because While Duck Gets Work, I never did get most of his albums, but yeah, he's good as already is. Number 6, The Weeknd, After Hours. Like, if you would have told me that I would have liked a Weeknd album this year, I would have called you crazy. I like some of his songs, but never been much of a huge fan of most of his albums, but this year, yeah, it's his best album to date. And I think it's because it's, like, while last time Starboy, he got Daft Punk to collaborate with him. I think what works is, he's kind of a more, you know, more artist just, like, out there. Like, he got one just put never on a fucking song or two. I mean, he's got stuff from, you know, Max Martin, Metro Boomin, Kevin Parker, all the motherfuckers in there. But, yeah, this is way more, like, experimental pop that can still be even the mainstream, but still retaining the experimental edge with, you know, with this blend of 80s new wave synth pop shit going on. Like, the songs hit, like the songs hit. Of course, Blinding Lights is the biggest hit of the fucking year. I'm pretty sure people who make a top 10 list, they're gonna have Blinding Lights in there and Blinding there somewhere. There's gonna be Blinding Lights. I don't know if it won't do it, but I know that people gonna talk about this song. But yes, there's also still the Hearts of Love, my favorite track on there. Scared to Live, which is damn good. Also check out the SNL live version of that, which I still go back to Heartless, which is growing on me, In Your Eyes, which that song gets better and better every time I hear it. Let's put that motherfucking sax. Also, there's a Kenny G version in there, like, even got him collaborate on it, which I'm not mad at. But yeah, the songs hit, the singles hit, and this is the most I've been from a Weeknd project, which, again, I'm starter wide, getting in no Grammy love, but that's just me. Maybe I don't feel like the people from the Grammys, which is kind of a good thing, because I'm more innovative from them. But fuck it. Number 5, Clipping, Vincent Body's Being Burned. Oh yes, this album from last year. This really does, like, you know, they did again with Clipping Body's presentation and production, and of course, Eve Dick's rapid storytelling is ever so, you know, very skin of thought. Like, again, this is the guy that can rap fast, but tells a story. Actually got me enthralled what he's talking about. That's what, if you're gonna rap fast, do some storytelling that shit. Which he did, and he did, like, I know it's basically what's supposed to be the album that's basically what's supposed to be for the last album, but it's some damn good leftovers. And they got some more, you know, interesting music techniques. They have the whole 7-8 technique in Paint Every Day. The use of EVP in songs. And Chet the Lock, that fucking killer bass groove. That shit is just fucking amazing. Every time I hear that song, I just gotta go like, oh shit, that just hit. Like, if you say, oh shit, like, but once again, Clipping did it again, yeah, they didn't know the album, now I enjoy having a puppy for Hanukkah. Yeah, that's to get out of my head. Like, they did a song for Disney, for all people, which I get, because the Beat Dicks is, you know, he's out there and all. But yeah. Number 4. Oh, look. It's all Fire Tools with Rainbow Bridge. The art set, I pretty much says, give her everything. Give her this, give her that, give her all this shit, give her all that. And even though she's number 4, this is still a fantastic album, going deep into more genres that listen all. If it was small, I'll be here forever, but everything just ended up being more experimental, more weirder, more mesmerizing. Like the song Ever Widening Rings just got this transcendent sound of something out of an RCP score. It wasn't harsh metal added into it. Like, Everything about this movie just amps, like, even the title tracks, like even the tracks just got more weird. Like, you got tracks like Margot Melody, which is spelled weird. You got Angel of Death, and that one song, which I say is something like Elon Musk's son or daughter, or, wait, shit, I, no.
Yeah, his like, son.
Weird. His son, like, his son's name. It's basically just one shit that I can't, that I would try to say, but I would fuck it up. I would fuck it up. E-R equal E-P-R-E-O-E-E-P. I would be forever doing this shit. All I'm saying is this. Fatos did it again. She, if you made another excellent album, and if she makes more content, which I think she was trying to figure out making more content soon, but I don't know. Who knows? Might say something for next year. Number 3. Freddie Gibbs and the Alchemist. Alfredo. I didn't think I would get a Freddie Gibbs album this year, to be honest. I mean, I was cool with Bandana, but I never expected to get him in the Alchemist. I mean, he's been killing it a lot recently, but you know, but yeah, this is some straight up heat. Like, I will say here, it's more. I will say touch on to get more that smoother shit from Alchemist. Like, you know, you get together from the guitar riff in 1985, which is sick, which is a killer. That's a little something you get from Look at Me, and to that very Sunset Beach vibe you get from something rapping about Tyler the Creator, which of course has a great check as well. And of course Freddie Gibbs, the Duke of Rapper's ass off and it's very short and concise 10-track project. Not only that, never thought this would get a rap Grammy nomination. Like, who would have thought in the year of our Lord 2020 that Freddie Gibbs would get a Grammy nomination? Even he said himself on the album about this shit, like, that's just, I'm glad he got it, which I hope he wins, which come on Grammy. If you could have, like, give him the Grammy win, come, but yeah, everything about this album just gonna be going back for way more. Like, you got there from Frank Lucas for being the butcher in there, Babies and Fools for Calling the Machine, which got really introspective in there, because both them niggas will be on some kill shit, but they will be introspective on some shit. And whenever they rap together, but all these proves that Gibbs still one of the best rappers in the game right now. Alchemist still one of the best producers in the game right now. Like, it's been locked, solidified, and all that shit. Number 2 is Ka with Descendants of Cain. Yeah. I will say this. Something this album kind of matched my mood. Like, you would hear some somber shit on here, which is basically talking about him growing up in the streets, which is basically him paralleling himself with things from the Bible, Book of Genesis, all that shit. It's like, you know the thing he always does with because of the album, which again, it's still interesting thing from him and still doing that shit, and I still like it that he does that. And of course, it was in that round, straightforward, with no filler bullshit. While it bears repeating, like his kind of hip hop storytelling overcooked to me. Like, even though, like it's a story that I'm thought in, like, because when I know what happens, nigga, it's sort of like a movie, but in audio form, at least to me. And I always kind of get that recall all the time listening to this album a lot, and I gun this album a lot. Like, again, like, from sort of every now and then, Under Dust, Sons of the Father, which got this very behind, and Mark Rossiano, and a lot of the final track I love, which picture to his, to his wife, his mom, and his late brother, which, okay, I did that a lot. I really fuck with that a lot. And now, the number one album of the year. You can say my choice is very bold. My number one album of 2020 is Bodhi James and the Alchemist, The Price of Tea in China. Yeah, this was back in February. Yeah, so like you, Alex, a project in February got released in February. I was like, I didn't think this was the number one album, but it's like, well, it happened.
Yeah, so it's bold, like, and brash.
And neither of them belong in the trash.
Yep. Here's the thing. I just thought on a whim, because, I mean, I don't know, before this album, I didn't know much about Boy James, to be honest, like, before this album, and I know from a few features he does a lot of hypebeast projects associated with him, and you know what, I started getting a listen, and you know what, yeah, I was really for this, like, again, y'all know me, like, I tend to like a lot of, you know, grimy street, dirty hip-hop projects with these dire, melancholy, sinister sounds. And I like the fact that the rapper has, you know, a very low tone of his voice and his lyrics and style. Like, Boy James, like, I know it sounds kind of, you know, voice is very low like that. That's what I like about him. I like that. I like that rapper does that. I mean, I don't know about that. It means he ain't playing with this shit. Man, I like that shit. Like, you got songs, I mean, you got enough songs like Karoof, Slow Roll, Speed Demon Freestyle, and Pinto. My favorite track on this, which there was so much, like, because the way I live is like, it maybe, you know, his cadence, it's literally the tone that I don't feel so right and in my wheelhouse. Like, even if he just plays so well, like, you got Ben Staples on Surf and Turf, Freddie Gibbs and Snort, Being the Butcher and Snatch the Bowl, and Evidence in Great October. And you know what else is that I actually like about this album? The deluxe edition only has 4 new tracks on it. Only 16 tracks. Don't feel too long, because it just fits right. Because do you know how fucking this year with rap albums, there always be some deluxe editions where there's be like 16 fucking more tracks of an album that's already felt too fucking long. Every motherfucker does that shit, making long ass albums just to fit streaming rights, just to do streaming shit. Which
we're looking at you, Lil Uzi Vert.
Yeah, look at him, the baby, little baby, even Pop Smoke, but that's not his fault. He rest in peace. He rest in peace.
And there's Eminem doing whatever the fuck that was.
Yeah, you heard of Kris Kristofferson? Well, I'm pissed, Kristofferson. And no, that wasn't a Photoshop someone threw up on Twitter. That's an actual lyric. Fucking A.
Oh, God. All I can say is, thank God Moody James just added just four tracks, and all of them are actually good. Even the ones I found okay, they're still better than what the fuck everybody else doing. Especially one track, Belvedere, which, of course, is still good. Like, here's the thing, like, I go to stuff like this not because of the whole grammar shit, because maybe I'm more invested in what the rapper goes on about what he does in his life. Like, hell, that's why I like projects from him, Griselda, Cobb, Marciano, rappers in the vein, to me about them in their life. Like, nothing flashy or gaudy, or maybe a bit of flash, but it's like, oh, it's pretty easy. It's like, yeah, we have to grab this shit, and it's not fun. I mean, maybe we're enjoying our shit, but remember that it's just not easy to come by. Like that type of rap. That's what I like about this. That's what I like about this. Like, being what they are, what they do. Like, even if someone's like Surfer Turf, what goes on about how he never plays his son because he been on the streets, he be streets, you know, grinding that shit. Which, right, although I do encourage y'all to not grind so much, like, out there, but yeah, this album's been the one that I've been listening to almost every other day, like, whether it be the whole album or one of his tracks, like, the song, like, whether it be songs in my mind, like, the song Pinto is always in my mind, the song Snatch the Bowl is always in my mind, Stork is always in my mind, Slow Rolls is always in my mind. Like, this is the album that I just instantly fell in love with from the start, and keep on going on. It's definitely a great album to listen to. And so, Boney James and Alchemist, The Price of Tea in China, is my favorite album of 2020. And with that said, in conclusion, 2020 ain't shit, but we'll fix that shit next year.
You should probably pick up that mic. I'm not sure if you'll be able to afford a new one.
That's not the mic, that's my phone.
The same principle applies. I'm just saying, man. I mean, unless you decide you're going to use your newfound superpowers to break into the Pentagon and demand a stimulus check, or wherever the hell those fucking ghoulish bastards are meeting up to decide how little we're worth as people. Bastards.
Not to mention, you're not giving us nothing again. You're giving us nothing again. God, y'all suck.
And how?
Sure is great to always be handcuffed and bottlenecked. It sure is, because the people around you want obstruction just because you don't. That's truly what's the most fucked about all of this. Two houses down, somebody hates you just for arbitrary bullcrap.
Yeah,
so now that we're at the last stretch of this podcast, I suppose it's time for me to close out with my usual, perhaps a bit needlessly excessive list. Here's the thing, though. I shifted a lot when crafting this list because, for perspective, I have like a document keeping track of everything I listened to in the year, and I listened, at the point I started crafting the list, I listened to about 145 albums that came out this year. You know?
Oh, wow.
Look, what do you want from me? I'm just like that. And going through that list and going through the first draft of it, I picked out about 70 that I theoretically cared about enough to consider, then whittled that down to 48, and then I was like, you know, maybe I could make this a 25. And then I decided, oh wait, this is probably going to be another 30. And then I actually did arrange everything into a tight, 30. But then I looked at the bottom five of the list and I excised them into, well, elsewhere, into the honorable mentions, and then looked at my final list and I'm like, you know, I'm happy with this. So, yeah, there goes my weird decision-making process into this whole entire thing. I'll get to the honorable mentions before we get to the top 10, just to get things started right here. I could say at least half of this list is just big mood throughout this entire fucking year, so let's get things started. Number 25, Antichrist Demon Corps, Satan is King. Filthy, repulsive, nasty-ass crust punk and grind that's every bit as royally pissed off at everything that's been going on this year as, well, lots of people, myself included. Just how much you want to see the entire world get fucked into oblivion because of the bastards that are trying to fuck everything into oblivion. You just need some really fast-pummeling, blast-beaty rhythms with some slower, pounding power violence. This is a violent, violent album for indulging fantasies that would otherwise be illegal if done in reality. You know, if you're making money that I'm making. If you're rich, you can just do that shit to people, no problem. Bastards. But yeah, anyway, angry, violent grind fits the mood rather well. Number 24, Imperial Triumphant, Alphaville. You know what makes black metal better? Freeform jazz! I'm doing the Patrick Star pose right now. But yeah, jumping on the bandwagon with this band after Vile Luxury came out a couple years ago and just blew up all the metal year-end best of lists, I gave this one a listen, and it, of course, is another one of those records that it's definitely avant-garde, but it's still got this very filthy, caustic miasma to it, very much drawing from, like, the imagery of, you know, classic films like Metropolis, as well as just the sort of iconography of New York City in and of itself. You know, you listen to tracks like City Swine or Atomic Age that are full of these, like, freewheeling, angular guitar melodies and rhythms with these, you know, freestyling, you know, that kind of jazz rhythms and everything, with, you know, dots of horns and trumpets and samples of, like, the New York subway system, or a lonely night in, like, a bar with just a lone person at the piano just playing something for you to meditate on life while you're sipping a shot of whiskey or something. You know, it's that kind of vibe. And yeah, as someone who enjoys stuff like that, this is an album that was absolutely doing it for me. Number 23, Igor, Spirituality and Distortion. Now, metal can be a lot of things. It can, of course, be very, very heavy and intense. It can be melodically beautiful. It can be sardonic commentary on our society. It can even be emotionally compelling under the right circumstances. But one thing I really like is when metal is just wacky and weird for almost seemingly no reason than just to be wacky and weird. You know, like Gwar, or of course the mastermind Devin Townsend. There definitely is that same DNA running through this, an album that combines some really thick, massive, grooving guitar and, you know, drum rhythms, very excellently produced to bring that edge, with plenty of elements of, like, you know, Baroque music, waltz pianos, you know, horns, and of course, really, really strange glitchy electronics, whether that be on, like, the album opener, you know, Downgrade Desert, or tracks like Camel Dance Floor, Paranoid Bulldozer Italiano, and of course the single Parpang, which features our good friend Corpse Grinder from Cannibal Corpse having his vocals processed through whole fucking lots of digital processing. It's very strange, it's definitely an acquired taste, but that's the kind of weird metal shit that I'm into. Now, number 22, Lady Gaga, Chromatica. There's not really much to say in regards to poetically rationalizing this particular album. Originally set to come out sometime around April, but then getting delayed out because of this whole coronavirus thing. The delay, you know, ultimately didn't matter because the album was still very much worth the wait. Just going on from the more singer-songwriter, you know, pop of Joanne into, you know, full-on dance pop territory, Gaga just brings a really great pop record here. All the beats are really well-produced and catchy as all hell. The songwriting knows how to make the hooks stick in the brain with tracks like Alice, Stupid Love, Free Woman, and 911. And, of course, there's some pretty choice guest features on here, you know, the likes of Ariana Grande on Rain On Me, and, of course, Elton John on Sign From Above. And I guess there's that Blackpink collaboration, too. I don't know, like, I know very little about K-pop, so I don't know where this stacks up in the grand scheme of anything, but I like their appearance. And, yeah, just ever so wonderful music from Mother Monster herself. Now, there was among the many, many trends that were going on in music in 2020, both for good and for ill, one of the more notable ones was bands releasing albums sort of piecemeal, like, you know, they would release it in chunks or like song by song by song, and usually get like 6 or 7 songs before we even knew there would be like an album. Kind of like very, very extended, you know, promotional singles and whatnot. And number 21 is one such album, Gorillaz, Song Machine Season 1, Strange Times. Now, Gorillaz have kind of had a rocky path, you know, since their reunion. I liked Humans more than most people did, but I agree that it kind of had the problem of Damon Albarn feeling like he was a presence in a background with the collaborators taking over maybe a bit too much to the point where, you know, whatever the Gorillaz essence is felt kind of muddy. Then you had the Now Now, which was just full-on Damon Albarn on his own, and that one kind of went too far in the opposite direction. Like, it's very clear he needs those collaborators to, you know, make the style feel not so monotonous. And thankfully, with Song Machine Season 1, things seem like they're back on track, delivering a collection of jams, many of which heard before, and many not heard, especially if we're talking the deluxe version, that feel like they find the right balance between Damon Albarn taking control of things and letting the collaborators sprinkle their own unique flair. Of course, the album opener Strange Times with Robert Smith feeding into this weird, spacey atmosphere. There's, of course, very beautiful songs on here, like The Pink Phantom featuring Elton John and Six Lack, Aries featuring Peter Hook and Georgia, and, of course, I really like the track from the bonus cuts Opium featuring Earth Gang. And then, of course, you know, I still think my favorite track above all is definitely Pac-Man with Schoolboy Q. That's just one of the best instrumentals that Gorillaz have ever produced. Not to mention the way Damon and Schoolboy both perform on it. It kind of has much like the rest of the album, this very Plastic Beach era vibe, which is probably why, you know, it sounds so much better than the previous two albums, because Plastic Beach still effing mint, as the kids would say. Except not sarcastically, yes, that album's really some good shit. Number 20. Protest the Hero, Palimpsest. Oh, God bless those beautiful Canadian bastards. Especially Rody Walker. That man still has pipes for days. Appropriately enough, bringing their, you know, really frenetic but also beautiful prog metal songwriting to an album whose name... This is an album that is pretty much all about the ways that people attempt to rewrite history in order to obscure more complicated matters. You know, whether it be, like, you know, the nature of someone like John Dillinger's crimes, to the fact that everybody thinks the Hindenburg is a tragedy until you realize it was a Nazi aircraft.
Oh.
Yeah, history is kind of fucked like that when you really think about it. And think about how appropriate that is in a year where it feels like the powers that be constantly try to lie to your face about what's actually going on in front of you and what's been happening with this country in the past. Yeah, I get the feeling they were very much on the pulse in that regard. But even if you ignore that particular commentary, the songwriting, as always, is incredibly on point. Their sense of really frantic rhythms is very tightly maintained through, you know, the excellent drumming, the great guitar work. And again, Rhodey's voice, the way it can, you know, belt out just some really beautiful soaring melodies and then go into some really, you know, hard and heavy screaming is just chef's kiss. That is some beautiful shit going on right there. Number 19. Napalm Death, Throes of Joy in the Jaws of Defeatism. 30 plus years. That's about how long Napalm Death's been in the metal game. And somehow they have not skipped a beat at all in that time. They still fucking have it in every conceivable aspect. Their ability to write these chaotic, just energetic grind jams full of, you know, really filthy, pummeling energy, all bolstered by Barney Greenway's vocals still carrying the same kind of potent bite that they did when he first joined the band. And on this album especially, yeah, there's a lot of that, you know, typical grind energy, like on the first couple of tracks, Fuck the Factoid and Backlash Just Because, but you also get some mild bits of more experimental tendencies here and there, like the doomier elements in Joie de ne pas vivre, of course the groovy as hell Amoral, and the strangely Swans-esque closer, A Bellyful of Salt and Spleen. Yeah, it's weird to think. These guys, like, you think it wouldn't matter whether a new Napalm Death album is good or not. That legacy is pretty much secure, but the fact that they're still willing to, you know, push on forward hard and heavy and even mix things up when necessary is, it's a testament to why they have the legacy that they do, and it's still very firmly well-deserved. Number 18. Fire Tools, Rainbow Bridge. First of all, as a very important reminder, Breakfast was a very good cat. I am absolutely sure of this. Because, yep, you know, all cats are good. Except for the ones that try to eat plastic. Those are bad cats. Anyway, yeah, so once again, another helping of very, very avant-garde vaporwave electronic, fusing it in with elements of, you know, metal, screamo, and 80s glam and soft rock, among many other things, into a very, very distinct pastiche that, you know, feels like the rabbit hole of internet nostalgia. I'm still convinced it's not actually safe to turn off my computer, by the way. You know, letting vibes carry through songs, especially on, like, ever-winding rings, where the whole thing is just, like, those old computery synths with some glam rock guitars being cut off by Angel Mark Lloyd's, you know, vicious cutting screams. The way those screams can punctuate several songs when they go into, like, not just the electronic parts, but also the blast-beaty, grindy elements here and there is some very, very wonderful shit. And, yeah, of course, there's that one song that, you know, now that I think about it, it looks less like the name of Elon Musk's kid and more like a line of code from Cyberpunk 2077. I'm just saying. But, yeah, very fine stuff all around. Two great albums, pretty much in a row. Will there be one in 2021? Who knows? But, you know, I will, of course, be there at this rate. Number 17, End, Splinters from an Ever-Changing Face. Because of the particular mood of this year, I find myself, you know, jumping to a lot of hardcore type music here and there. And while there was that Ghost Inside album that came out over the summer, which was a welcome comeback for a band that's been out of the game, you know, following their tragedies and whatnot, I feel like this one in particular just felt like it slammed the hardest and hit the heaviest, employing the talents of a multitude of, you know, metal and hardcore musicians, including Counterparts vocalist Brendan Murphy, Fit for an Autopsy guitarist Will Putney, and even Billy Reimer of the Dillinger Escape Plan on drums. Just song after song, menacing riffs after menacing riffs, veering all over the place from furious blast beaty fire to straight up slower, heavier, just trudging mammoths of jams like on Hesitation Wounds or even the closer Sands of Sleep. This was just sheer, raw, unfiltered, you know, anger from start to finish. Exactly the kind of shotgun blast of aggression I need in these very, very dire times. Number 16, the first album that I declared would be a year-end contender, Algiers, There Is No Year. There's a lot of talk these days, you know, about, oh, rock is dying, rock is irrelevant, what does rock need to do to get people to give a shit? Well, I can tell you that the metalcore kids from the 2010s recycling the butt rock of the 2000s probably isn't it. But what is it would probably be an album like this. Once again, the band has their distinct blend of, you know, contemporary post-punk mixed with, you know, soul, gospel, and even some touches of noise here and there. Just enough to mix things up. You have the beautiful, you know, piano and choir gospel melodies of songs like Dispossession. All these great uses of, like, soulful melodies throughout. And, of course, closing out on the absolute banger of a closing track, Void, which is still one of the best punk jams of the year. It's like, holy shit, this really is proving how you can make rock relevant in a modern era. You just have to, you know, have a distinct ear for influence and know how to write songs that actually have charisma instead of sounding like freaking stale-ass bread. Yeah, I'm telling you, man, that Franklin's vocals, that dude is one of the best in the game right now. Y'all could stand to learn a thing or two. Number 15, Ives Tumor, Heaven to a Tortured Mind. So this is what it would sound like if Prince and David Bowie were really into noise rock. Because, yeah, while we moved on from the more electronic ambient influence of Ives' previous project, this time around, yeah, we're getting all that 80s glam, but there's still that distinct experimentation with tracks like the album opener Gospel for a New Century, with its kind of choppy sampled beats mixing up against these blaring fuzzy guitars. Other great tracks like Dream Palette, Superstars, and of course the single Kerosene, which really just lets, like, you know, those serene R&B guitar melodies mix up against, you know, glammy shreddiness. And just the very, very aggressively horny nature of it all. Like, seriously, I'm not going to be surprised if it turns out there were kids conceived to this album, probably in the middle of this whole pandemic. You know, but, hey, it's good music to fuck to, is what I'm saying. Number 14, Elder, Omens. This is an album that is 55 minutes, stretched out across only 5 songs. Yeah, it's one of those records. Just the finest kind of, you know, stonery, kind of progressive rock. Kind of like if Kyliza was really into Yes, with those very lengthy song progressions and that very, like, you know, dirty, you know, buzzy kind of guitar tone with that nice crunch and fuzz to it. The track that stands out to me the most would be the middle track of the record, the longest on it, Halcyon, running at nearly, like, 13 minutes, but it is emblematic of everything that works about the record in that it really knows how to maintain its momentum and just build and build these great rhythms, these beautiful, lush guitar melodies that still sound melodically gorgeous even when the distortion on the guitars kicks in. It sounds like a genuine, you know, prog epic in the kinds that would probably let this band be really big in the 70s. Number 13. Open Mic Eagle, Anime, Trauma, and Divorce. Holy shit, are those motherfucking JoJo references? Yes. Yes, they are. And I think about that particular track, I'm a Joestar, quite a bit. Not just because the actual song itself is a really great, you know, vibey rap jam, complete with Mike basically rapping about his own self-insert JoJo OC, but also just that opening segment in particular where it sounds like he's arguing with someone, you know, off in the corner. That moment where he's like, stop trying to take this away from me. Because I think that moment speaks to the heart of the album as a whole. Because, again, his divorce, financial struggles, his Comedy Central show getting canceled after just one season, along with everything in this godforsaken year, has just not been kind to the man at all. And, you know, when you're trying to find stuff to make you feel better, sometimes all you have are, like, the simple pleasures, like gold chains or anime or stuff like that. And if someone were to try and take that away from you, what the hell would you even do at that point? Because Lord knows Mike's not going to engage in any sort of self-care, which, let me say, what the fuck is self-care is, in fact, a mood. Just, you can hear it, like, him struggling to, you know, keep his head above water as everything, you know, just keeps feeling like it's going down. And, you know, especially when you hear that one line in, I think, the track Everything Ends Last Year, when he's just like, it's October and I'm tired. Has there been a more relatable line sung by any person this year in a more relatable way? We're all just fucking tired at this point. Number 12, Thundercat, It Is What It Is. Speaking of albums about trying to cope with tragedy, here we have Mr. Steven Bruner once again laying down the sick, sick bass lines, whether they be the fast show-offy types, like in, for example, I Love Lewis Cole, with, you know, those really fast drums playing up just how rapid his playing is, or, you know, the more vibey ones like on Dragon Ball Do-Rag, which is still one of my favorite songs of the entire year. How can you just not vibe to a man singing about how much he wants a woman to be impressed by his anime-themed headwear? But all of that is just kind of like a smokescreen that tries to cover up, you know, feelings of, well, you know, dread, inadequacy, just being depressed about everything and trying to put on a happy face like on Miguel's Happy Dance. Or, you know, the song King of the Hill about people who are trying to obtain power, but, like, you know, at what cost? Of course, you know, how he's still upset by, you know, the unfortunate passing of Mac Miller. And, yeah, this is just a great album that is, again, very emotionally sincere when you look beneath the surface, but still has a lot of those, you know, well, basically those humorous sort of Adult Swim-isms floating throughout the whole thing. I mean, fucking Zach Fox appears on the track. Although, unfortunately, he does not, once again, stick his dick in a bag of Doritos. You know, sometimes you just feel underwhelmed by those things. Number 11. The Ocean. Phanerozoic Part 2. Mesozoic, Cenozoic. Now, it's been a couple years since the first part of this project came out. You know, Phanerozoic 1, which did make my top list that year, because The Ocean are great, and of course, no surprise, the follow-up would make my list as well. This is a perfect example of what you would call cinematic metal, in that these are a lot of very lengthy songs, like when you listen to the lead single Jurassic Cretaceous, that's like 13 minutes, but you can tell they make excellent use of every single second in terms of how the song is paced out to build as it transitions between these, you know, vast sounding but very melodic kind of soft parts with the big dramatically crushing heavy parts. Like, it's flowing with a sort of narrative intent, even though there's very clearly not a movie accompanying all of this. The album as a whole is actually pretty well structured in that it knows how to balance out not just different song lengths but songs of different tones. You know, some songs mix up heavy and light, some are, you know, just pure heavy with a couple of pure atmospheric, you know, kind of post-metal jams in there to kind of break things up. It's just a really, it's probably one of the most well-structured albums I've heard all year. And let that be a lesson. Like, this can be an object lesson in how much the way you arrange tracks on a record can count for a lot in the grand scheme of things. And now before we move on to the top 10, let's go into a bunch of honorable mentions. Now, I said that I snipped 5 off of the bottom list and was somehow satisfied, so let me just go ahead and list off what those 5 were. The unofficial 26 through 30. So, number 26, Preservation, Eastern Medicine, Western Illness. Number 27, Backwash, God Has Nothing to Do with This, Leave Him Out of It. Number 28, Jeff Rosenstock, No Dream. Number 29, which is technically 2 albums, but I grouped them together as one. Old Man Gloom, Seminar 8, Light of Meaning, and Seminar 9, Darkness of Being. By the way, since this is a band that has Stephen Brodsky in it, congratulations to the guys at 2 Minutes to Late Night for finally hitting a million views on a video. That Rush cover was very good, and y'all deserve it. And number 30, that Greg Pucciato solo project, Child Soldier, Creator of God. Now, for just quickly running down the other honorable mentions and whatnot, Megan Thee Stallion, Good News, Health, Disco 4, Part 1, Paul Bearer, Forgotten Days, Vermicide Violence, The Praxis of Prophylaxis. Sorry, Jared Alonji, I know I listened to that album a lot this year, but sorry, you only get the honorable mention. Still a good record, though. Year of the Knife, Internal Incarceration, Uniform, Shame, Ulcerate, Stare Into Death and Be Still, Primitive Man, Immersion, 10 Tricks Point Never, Magic 10 Tricks Point Never, Arm and Hammer, Shrines, Hum, Inlet, Expander, Neuropunk Booster Gang, Black Crown Initiate with Violent Portraits of Doomed Escape, Boris with No, and finally, Deftones' Ohms. This was originally going to be on the top list proper. You all know why it got demoted to honorable mention. Huh. Stephen Carpenter, fucking why? Anyway, now back to the list proper. Number 10. Haken. Virus. The spiritual successor to, you know, 2018's Vector. This album itself got delayed multiple times, but unlike certain other 2020 projects that got delayed multiple times, this one was actually worth the delays. And also I could listen to the album without having it crash my computer. But yeah, Haken continue to prove themselves to be just absolutely at the top of their game in the modern prog scene, mostly due to the fact that they are really great songwriters. Like, they know how to flex their technicality and stuff in ways that still create, like, memorable processions, like the album opener Prosthetic with its really great usage of rhythm and melodies to break up all that, you know, veering between heavy and catchy and, you know, beautifully melodic. You have the melodies of tracks like The Strain, which feel very, you know, beautiful, epic, and vast. Of course, what prog album isn't complete without a multi-part musical suite, that being the 5-part Messiah Complex, that throws all of this together into a set of tracks that runs that whole entire gamut, with its unique rhythms, its great use of guitar riffs and drums and keyboards, the great vocals all across. This is why I listen to prog metal. It is just thoroughly good shit all over. Number 9. Clipping, Visions of Bodies Being Burned. Once again, Clipping coming clutch in the month of October with a rap album that manages to be more horrifying than a lot of the actual metal albums I've heard all this year. Though, you could tell it's a bit down from where There Existed an Addiction to Blood was last year at number 2, but that doesn't change the fact that every second of this album is extremely well crafted, from the great bars to the unique production, flexing their knowledge of, you know, the sort of 90s and 2000s aesthetics of horror, whether that be 96 Neve Campbell, Say the Name, Pain Every Day, which still manages to be my favorite track, of course, check the log, that being a great, you know, wonderfully paranoid track about a drug dealer making sure someone's not coming for him. And, of course, it was fun to hear Body for the Pile again, you know, a song about cops dying off, which totally doesn't have any relevance in the year of our Lord 2020. It totally doesn't. I'm just making sure the FBI agent is gone right now. I'm pretty sure he's not listening to this. But, yeah, leave it to David Diggs and company to bring a really great, you know, ear for wild, crazy, noisy beats and just terrifying bars about all kinds of horror shit. Number 8. The Acacia Strain, Slow Decay. Now, this is another one of those albums, like that Gorillaz album and that Health album, that was kind of rolled out in a very piecemeal sort of way, where we pretty much heard almost the entirety of it, save for the two brand new songs that were added on here, as they were releasing different lettered EPs throughout the year. And Acacia Strain have been on a pretty interesting kick, you know, ever since they shadow dropped that one album at the end of last year. And what gets me about this album is that this is a perfect example of timing. This is like, a lot of the music here still sits firmly in that very, you know, heavy, you know, deathcore territory, you know, going through the rapid double kicks, the slow pummeling grooves with its occasional faster passages, and of course, Vincent Bennett's great mix of coherency with just absolute brutality in his screams. So, it's a bit, on its own, it's probably the best thing they've released in a while. It's definitely a lot more musically interesting than some of the projects they came out with in years past. But I feel like with this year in particular, it's been a better time than ever to dive into the Acacia Strain's own brand of cartoonishly excessive nihilism, whether that be on the album opener Feed a Pigeon, Breed a Rat, the aggressiveness of The Lucid Dream, which features guest vocals from Jess Nix, or even I Breathed in the Smoke Deeply, It Tasted Like Death, and I Smiled. Good lord, isn't that a friggin' mood? But of course, the song that I probably keep coming back to the most is 1000 Painful Stings, featuring Courtney LaPlante on guest vocals, mostly because I keep thinking of that one chorus line. We called, no one answered, total fucking failures. Isn't that just an absolute mood? Number 7. Invent Animate, Grayview. Now, I, strangely enough, found myself diving into, you know, back into sort of my high school metalcore and deathcore phases, as you could tell by the fact that there was that Jared Alange deathcore album and that Acacia Strain album. And this project in particular, I heard some hype about it, and it does sound like the kind of thing I absolutely would have been all over back in my high school days. Although, to my knowledge, this band's only really been around since, like, 2014. It's just a really fantastically composed metalcore project that it has some of those kind of melodic elements and those, you know, chuggy-chug rhythms, but there's greater attention to detail in regards to the intricacy of a lot of the riffs, the way melodies are composed, and, you know, drum rhythms and everything. It's not just basic chug. It's far from it. There is some work being done to, you know, add a lot of flavor and technique to everything. In fact, when we did the album roundup where I brought up this album, my first thing that I'm pretty sure I said about was that this feels like a more refined version of Architects. And I even found myself saying, this is an album that'll probably hold me over until that next Architects project comes out. Oh, Rob from March 2020, if only you could have known what was coming. Because now that we're getting promotional material for that new Architects album, yeah, I feel like I'm gonna have to keep Invent Animate on standby, because it looks like they're gonna get shown up. I mean, when this album has such great heavy melodic jams like Cloud Cascade, Shapeshifter, Monarch, and of course Eden, you have to wonder just, this style can be refined further. It can be done so much more excellently. And you're just sitting there thinking, why the hell Architects are going into basic bitch mode? I don't understand the world. Number 6. Run the Jewels, RTJ 4. Now, admittingly, I think RTJ3 might still be my favorite Run the Jewels album overall. Not to say that this album isn't great, far from it. Every song is consistently a banger, but I don't know, that's just kind of where my mind is at. But that being said, that doesn't change the fact that, once again, Mike and L prove themselves to be the goddamn blockbuster action heroes that the rap world needs. They are just oozing coolness from track to track, like on the album opener Yankee and the Brave, or Ooh La La with those excellent contributions from Greg Nice and DJ Premier. They know how to also cut straight through the bullshit of the world and expose the evils of society for what they are on tracks like Holy Kalamafuck, and of course Just, which is the requisite appearance of Zack de la Rocha from Rage Against the Machine. And apparently Pharrell Williams as well, which is easily the most I've liked an appearance of his on, well, anything in a while. And of course, we need not forget some of the other collaborators. Shit, this album actually kind of got me to like a 2 Chainz bar for, you know, first time ever. And of course, pulling the pin with those great guest contributions from Mavis Staples and Josh Homme. So yeah, once again, leave it to these two to just fucking set off explosions, fire off guns, crash cars, fuck bitches, do drugs, everything that badass action heroes do. And thankfully, they won't have to deal with any glitches that cause cars to disappear off the road. My god, how the hell is Cyberpunk 2077 even real? This feels like the kind of game you would come up with to satirize the practices of the games industry. Is that what's happening? Is CD Projekt Red engaged in some kind of performance art that lost the plot?
I haven't even started it, and I still want my $50 back.
Oh my god. Sorry, I just can't stop focusing on that. This is the most fascinating failure that's happened in ever. But back to the list. Number 5. Oh hey, look, it's the obligatory slot for this band. The Black Dahlia Murder. Verminous. Yes, yes, I know, I'm letting my fanboyism shine through, but once again, albums like this prove why the Black Dahlia Murder are a force to be reckoned with. Taking an extra year off between albums because, as I believe I said before, there was just a higher demand for Black Dahlia Murder live shows during the last album cycle, it definitely feels like that extra bit of time was worth it, just enough to add even more just potency to the band's extremely evil, vicious melodic death metal. Coming through with an album that reeks of the kind of toxic green miasma that the album cover does, with the album opener Verminous just ripping right out of the gate with those sinister interlocking guitar rhythms, the constant momentum of the drums, and of course the ever so vicious vocals of Trevor Strnad, you know, when he's not teaming up with Allegeon to cover Wham. Yeah, did y'all see that? That's a thing. Apparently Allegeon and Trevor covered Last Christmas. And the guy from Cattle Decapitation.
Yep.
But yeah, just diving into more pure evil with tracks like Removal of the Oaken Stake, and of course, Child of Night, The Leather Apron Scorn. This is just an album that radiates pure evil from track to track, and it is exactly the kind of sinister but well-written and very greatly performed death metal that I am always going to be into. This might be my high school bias shining, but you know what? They continue to prove why they have that bias. Or why I have that bias towards that. You know what I mean. I'm bad at phrasing right now. Number 4. And this one is technically 2 albums, but I'm grouping them together in one entry. 9 Inch Nails, Ghost 5 Together, and Ghost 6 Locusts.
Ah, interesting.
Things have, of course, been going pretty well for the duo of Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, their big Emmy win for HBO's Watchmen, and, of course, their upcoming soundtrack to Pixar's Soul. These guys have pretty much always kept busy, and shadow dropping these two projects in March, tracks that eschew the more traditional songwriting of the previous major Nine Inch Nails album we got a couple years back, in favor of material that aligns more with their composition work. And I listened to these albums a good couple of times during the month that they first dropped. And then there was the summer where I was completely out of work. And for some reason, during the days and nights where I was struggling to keep track of time or even get some decent sleep, for some reason, these were the albums that I kept gravitating towards. I don't know, something about the vibes that they create, whether it be the ethereal, lush scents of the brighter compositions on 5, or the darker, more unnerving compositions of Ghost 6, something about those vibes just kind of resonated with me. Maybe it was the sense of weightlessness and just unnerving terror that I felt as I was just, you know, sitting there staring up at the ceiling, wondering what the fuck time it even was and how long it was ago since I last was able to sleep. And just the great composition work in general already makes these some really great records to listen to. But yeah, that I don't know, I just connected with this in a way that very few albums did. Like, if I had to pick between the two, I'd probably say Ghost 6 is my favorite of the bunch, just because its darker and more intricate compositions resonated with me a lot more. But I absolutely do recommend, if you can find 2.5 hours to kill, listening to the two back-to-back, as they do feel like they're complementary pieces of a whole. Number 3. Intronaut. Fluid Existential Inversions. Yeah, this is definitely one of my most listened to albums of the year, you know, right up there with stuff like the Nine Inch Nails projects. It's been 5 years since they dropped The Direction of Last Things, and it's feel like an eternity. Especially considering, you know, I don't think the breaks between their albums have usually been all that long, but still, it's felt like a lot. And of course, coming clutch with this new project, bringing just a refined tightness to everything that works about the band. They have really, really great technical chops, like when you hear the first proper track on the album, Cubensis, with its rapid momentum, with its really great driving intricate drums, here provided by Alex Ruttinger, if I recall correctly. There's the really great, you know, intricate interlocking guitar rhythms and melodies, the great riff work, and while a lot of it is very technically precise and brings like a nice heaviness to it, the parts that also work really great are the moments that kind of counteract this. They're still every bit as technical, but they're also these very melodic, serene passages that carry a very melancholic vibe that makes it feel like it's more than just the band, you know, churning out complicated time signatures and rhythms just for the sake of it. They can be moody as hell when they want to be, like with The Cull or the closing minutes of Check Your Misfortune. It's just a really well-rounded album on all fronts. And again, everything that I love about like contemporary progressive metal these days. Hopefully it won't be that much longer for whatever the next album from these guys is, because I need more of that material in my life. Number 2. Loathe. I Let It In and It Took Everything. Oh boy, did this seem like the breakout metal success story of 2020. I only checked it out on a whim because I saw like a random tweet from Fantano's profile. I didn't even watch the review at the time. I just saw a tweet that mentioned like, oh, if you're really into Deftones and Dillinger Escape Plan. And that wasn't even him tweeting. I think that might have been someone tweeting in response to him, but that caught my attention. And listening to this album, this is one of the most interesting metalcore records I've heard in a while. And that kind of description is a bit apt, but there's also a lot more to it. Like, it definitely has a lot of those Deftones-esque shoegaze melodies playing off against, you know, a metal backdrop. When you listen to the chorus of Aggressive Evolution, which has, like, you know, those really lush guitars, that steady drum beat, and of course, the really great melodic vocals of frontman Kadeem France, and then it counteracts against a lot of these really detuned guitar and bass riffs with these really great, you know, off-kilter kind of halftime drum progressions. And it just goes from there. This album, going into like the Dillinger, you know, influence, it's got a very mathcore sensibility to it, but maybe not as hectic as Dillinger. It definitely feels a bit more controlled, but that allows some of the songs and the rhythmic complexities to shine through a lot more. Like when you listen to the full-on heavy onslaught of the track Gourd, the way that intro guitar riff builds into this really pummeling, frantic set of riffs and drum rhythms. Then you have tracks like New Faces in the Dark, probably my favorite cut on the record overall, because it has the most interesting song progression with that kind of fast-driving melodic intro to the metalcore verse, to that really great melodic bridge, and then that really noisy, chaotic as hell outro. And then, you know, just all over the place, the album really knows how to balance out these extremes of, like, the crazy frenetic rhythms, the gorgeous melodic songwriting. Hell, even Deftones frontman Chino Moreno, I kid you not, there was an interview of this on the record where he says that the material on this album is better than anything he could have ever written. That's got to be high praise when your main influence says your music is better than theirs. And yeah, it was pretty cool to see these guys kind of emerge as, like, the breakout success that a whole lot of metal publications were playing to, because, like, I kept seeing this band around, just posted everywhere and everywhere, and, you know, they might not have hit the success of something like, say, Code Orange, unfortunately, but for this being their second studio album to come out of the gate this confidently and with this kind of great metal songwriting, I see a very great future ahead for these guys, and I sure hope the rest, more and more people, pay attention to what's going on. Number one, surprising absolutely no one, Spanish Love Songs, Brave Faces, everyone.
Yep, I figured, yep,
doing
yep,
me and Luke proud, and possibly Crash, and possibly John, and possibly Mark, because you just never know. You never know how great the minds are thinking alike. That sounded better in my head. I'm tired.
We'll see once those year-end lists pop up, but yes, on just the pure, this was pretty much the album of 2020, regardless of how many people might have paid attention to it or listened to it. Nothing else really comes close to just capturing how miserable of a year this has been on, like, every conceivable front, with, you know, the racial injustice, the personal faults of, like, people losing loved ones because of COVID, or financial hardships, people going, you know, out of jobs, worrying about how they're gonna pay for shit. That's basically what happened to me over the summer, and all other sorts of heartbreaking interpersonal struggles. The thing that I think resonated with me the most is, like, I keep thinking about, like, I got into a relationship this year, and we're closing in on our 1 year anniversary. And I keep thinking about the fact that I can't see him because the goddamn border is shut down because of this whole goddamn plague. And just the pure, not clinical depression per se, but just the feelings of sorrow and sadness that realization has given me over this entire year with everything else that's been going on. For some reason, for obvious reasons, when those feelings come up, this album in particular is the one that I go to. The only thing that could really capture just the fucking, I don't want to think about, you know, heartache, sadness, the depression of just what this entire year has been on the big scale as well as the small scale. And just, you know, sitting here thinking about, you know, where the fuck my life is even going at this point, and just, yeah, I don't need to delve any further. It's just, this was the only album that really captured the spirit of 2020, or I guess lack of spirit, so to speak. And the first time in a while that a pop-punk album has really hit me in any sort of meaningful way. Not since, like, the Wonder Years Suburbia from 2011 have I felt this strongly about an album from this genre. Lord knows what the hell they're gonna have to do to top this on whenever the hell they decide they want to do a next album, because, I don't know, unless the year that comes out, it's every bit as depressing as this year. Yeah. Yeah. So, that's my list. That's all 25 of the albums that spoke to me on various levels throughout the year. And that closes the book on this episode, on this album Year End Spectacular, and just this whole fucking year in general. Good riddance, 2020. We hardly fucking knew ya. I seed my time. Fuck you. Or however the hell that guy said it.
Yeah, I believe that the coinage is suck my dick and choke on it. I yield my time. Fuck you.
That is all that needs to be said about 2020. And maybe next year we'll at least see some improvements. I mean, again, we got that vaccine coming on the horizon. Like, I just want to be able to see My Chemical Romance in concert. Yeah.
Hopefully we get some more people, and hopefully smart people will come quick in charge and hopefully do better things for us.
We have.
And not just.
We have a lot of work ahead of us.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, so thank you very much for listening to our opinions on music for what came out this year. We'll, of course, be back once the new year rolls around. Lord knows whether or not I'll be able to make the Eric Andre Coachella gag again. So, yeah, look forward to 2021's round of us talking about all the good music shit. And until then, peace out.
In closing, when future generations look at the year 2020, they're going to say only one thing. Damn, son, where'd you find this?
In other words, Kid Rock's 2020.